This eighth principle of spiritual manifesting is called acknowledging your results with gratitude and generosity. And the affirmation for this principle is, I am deeply thankful for all that I've received, and I enjoy giving to others in the spirit of love and service. This is a very important part, not only of being able to have show up in your life what it is that is the fulfillment of your heart's desire, but it is also a beautiful way to begin living your life every day. There's an old saying that says, if you're not generous when it's hard, you will not be generous when it's easy. And generosity isn't necessarily the giving away of what you have, but it's more of a attitude of spirit, as is gratitude. So there are really three components to this eighth principle. The first is gratitude, the second is generosity, and the third is service. Let me take them one at a time here. The first is gratitude, and I remember reading a book a few years back by a friend of mine. His name is Dan Millman. I believe Dan has a program with Nightingale Conard, a wonderful speaker, and he wrote a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And in The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, he had this character who was an enlightened kind of being. And in Dan's book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, this character's name was Socrates. And Socrates was this fellow who worked in a gas station, but he could do all of these bizarre kinds of things. He could jump up onto a roof 14 feet in the air by just transporting himself. And he had this ability to make himself disappear and to change his shape and do many of the things that most of us, because most of us are cookie thieves, believe somehow that we can't do these things, and we know a truth. And we are attached to that truth that this is the only dimension there is, and there are no other dimensions that I can get involved in or peer into, because my senses have told me this. And we've come to put an extraordinary amount of faith in these senses, which mislead us all the time about reality. So Socrates was one of these people who was living in a different dimension, a different level of consciousness. So Socrates tells his student to go out onto a rock and sit until he can think of something important and come back and tell him something important or something significant, I believe it was. And he goes out there, the student goes out there, Dan, he's telling his own story, and he sits there on a rock, and he sits there, and every time he thinks he's got something that's really important, then he thinks about telling Socrates this, he realizes how unimportant this is. So after sitting there for a long period of time, then finally, after going to Socrates and telling him things, and Socrates says, no, that's not important. Back he would go to his rock. And he did this two or three times. No, that's not significant. He'd go back to his rock. So finally he came and he said something, and Socrates said to him, you've got it. You have discovered something significant. And that something significant was, he said to him, there are no ordinary moments. There are no ordinary moments. And Socrates said, yes, that's significant. That is a great teaching, a great learning. And that's really the essence of gratitude. The essence of gratitude is understanding that every moment of your life is something to be grateful for. And that everything that shows up in your life is something that you will want to be expressing a sense of gratitude about. I speak often about how we take things for granted, and taking things for granted is one of the obstacles to having an attitude of gratitude. Taking things for granted very often, I mean, I've often said that I think we should have special days every year in which we appreciate all the different aspects of our being. You know, like we give thanks for our liver on Mondays, you know, on the 3rd of January, Liver Appreciation Day, you know, or just try to imagine what it would be like if you didn't have that liver. There would be nothing for you to imagine. And then you know, for the air that we breathe, and for the ground that we walk upon, and for gravity, and for the food that we have, and for the sky, and for, you know, our eyelids, which we just take for granted. Without them, how difficult it would be for us to get through even an hour of our day. And our toenails, and everything about ourselves, to begin to experience a sense of gratitude. Now, when we're talking about affirmations, and we're talking about manifestation, here we want to look at what it is we are asking to have manifested for ourselves. And remember, we are not creating anything. We're just redistributing, if you will. Everything that needs to be created is already in the universe. There's no place to go. I remember when the story was told of Swami Muktananda, great spiritual teacher, who was dying. And all of his devotees and students gathered around, and he was leaving. And he had announced that. His students were praying with him, and they were pleading with him, please don't go, please don't go, Swami. Please, we're not ready for you to leave. And he opened his eye and looked at them and said, don't be silly. Where could I go? Where is there to go? Everything is already here. And so, when you are manifesting and you are asking for things to show up in your life, as they begin to show up in your life, learning to be grateful for those. Now, that's not so difficult. Most of us say thank you. I have a little ritual that I do every day, and that is almost every day God sends money to me in some form, particularly when I'm running. Happens virtually every day of my life. And it's a little game, a mental game that I have played with myself. I'll be out running, and I'll be thinking about all of the abundance that has shown up in my life and how grateful I am and how grateful I am to have my children. One of the things that my wife and I practice regularly is telling our children how fortunate we feel to be their parents, how lucky we are, not how lucky they are to have us as parents, but how blessed and how grateful we are. And I'll often pick up my little boy or one of my little girls and just put my arms around and say, you know, I am really lucky to have you. You know, I'm really blessed to have you show up in my life. I feel that way about all my children. And having that kind of attitude is something that I do with everything that has shown up in my life. Because I lived a big hunk of my life without a lot of abundance, with a great deal of scarcity. But even while I was living in scarcity, there was never a sense of poor me, or I wish I had more. Or even looking at other people and saying, they've got it and I don't. That attitude keeps you from being grateful for what you have. Even as a child, I didn't learn to say, oh, they've got a Cadillac and we have to drive around in an old Chevy or something. There was a sort of an internal knowing that you haven't earned a Cadillac. You know, that isn't something that you even think about as being yours. They used to talk about being able to buy a Cadillac when I was a young man, you know, buying my first car, and they said a Cadillac cost almost $4,000. I mean, I couldn't comprehend a Cadillac costing $4,000 and having $4,000 to buy a car. I mean, it wasn't like something I would even give a moment's notice to. If other people had that was just their karma or that was their benefits or somehow they had done something to earn that. Now, today, when I go to buy a car, $4,000 is an option. You want this stereo system instead of this one? That'll cost $4,000 extra. All right, throw it in. What do I, you know, it's got extra speakers. I mean, my first car was an old 1950 Plymouth that had rusted out sides on it. And I washed that thing every day, and I was so proud of it. I was so excited about that. And the idea of looking at somebody else's new car and thinking that there was something wrong here, that they had it and I didn't, couldn't have occurred to me. And I believe it's that attitude of being grateful for whatever shows up in your life that allows additional things to show up in your life. And my little ritual that I play every day when I'm out running is little coins that I find in the street. I found one this morning when I was running before I made this presentation, right out in front of the hotel. A penny, a shiny penny. And you know, I have a... I've never admitted this in public before, but I have a large jar of coins that is hidden behind in a bookcase behind a hole. Nobody knows where this is except myself. And this contains all of the money that I have found in the last 20 years. And it's a huge amount of money. Some of it is wrinkled up bills. A lot of it is foreign money because I've run in foreign countries. And most of the coins are dirty and they've been out in the street for a long time. And there's a couple of $20 bills. There's a $100 bill in there. And every time I look at that, that little symbol that just keeps growing, it reminds me to be grateful. And when I pick up one of those coins, I always say, thank you, God, for this symbol of abundance that has shown up in my life. Thank you. And I put it in my pocket and I put it away in a special. And then when I get back to my office, I go to that little place and I put it in there and I look at that. And that's my reminder. What gratitude does is it keeps you connected to that source which brings things into your life. It keeps that connection open because gratitude comes from love. See, there's two ways to look at things in your life. There's to appreciate what shows up in your life or to depreciate what shows up in your life. And to depreciate it means to complain about it, to whine about it, to resent it because it's not big enough, it's not shiny enough, it's not what I wanted. That's a depreciation. And appreciation, to appreciate, means to have a sense of being grateful for it. Gratitude, there's a wonderful definition that I use for gratitude. Gratitude is the complete and full response of the heart to everything in the universe. The complete and full response of the heart to everything in the universe. And this gratitude disallows feelings of separateness from what shows up. See, resentment or complaining or fault-finding are things that block you, are obstacles to that free flow. They reinforce the idea that I am separate from that and it's not giving me enough. Gratitude for what shows up and expressing that gratitude with affirmations and regular affirmations of it is a way of keeping that channel clear between you and that divine presence. And doing this, this little ritual that I do with the coins, I also do it when I'm driving and someone lets me in into a lane when I'm trying to change lanes. And so there's this very quick and silent little thank you for that loving gesture. It doesn't seem like much. It's not like this big deal. I don't tell anybody about it. I happen to be talking about it now because it's just the focus of this particular principle. But it's not anything that I share with anybody else. It's a very private little thing that I do. When someone lets me into a parking space, a thank you, an acknowledgement. You know, when I'm in a grocery store and I go out to the car and I take the cart out to the parking lot and I put my groceries in the trunk, I always take the thing and I take it back. It doesn't seem like this. It's my own little private little thing. It's like I'm grateful for this food. When we go into a restaurant and we sit down and eat and there's a sign there that says generally, thank you for taking your tray and putting it back. And for my children have all learned that when we finish up where we're eating, we are thankful for the food and we're also thankful for the place that we have to eat and we want to leave it the way it was when we got here. We're grateful for the cleanliness. We're grateful for the air. There's this kind of attitude. I remember being with Wally Amos, famous Amos, in Hawaii, who also has a program with Nightingale Conant. Everybody seems to. And the first time I'd ever met him, we were walking in a street in Maui, and he saw a beer can there, and he said, excuse me. And he walked all the way over there, and he picked up the beer can, and he put it into the trash can. And he didn't say a word to me, and I didn't say a word to him, but I noticed that. I noticed there was a sense of gratitude for the islands. It's called an aloha kind of spirit, a sense of feeling grateful and expressing it in everything that you do in your life. And this kind of an attitude begins to become infectious. And it also opens the channel for more to show up. People who are grateful seem to get more than people who are resentful. You know why? Because people who are resentful don't understand that their resentment itself is what's blocking. And when they do get something, their instantaneous response to it is, it's not enough. It's not big enough. Somebody else got something that's better. I should have had this. I wanted it yesterday. It showed up too late. It's not the right color. It's not the right size. You know, the endless not feeling of gratitude. There's a wonderful little old joke about a lady who was on the beach with her grandson. And she's walking along the beach. And all of a sudden, this huge wave comes along and picks up the little boy. And he disappears. And she just goes down on her knees and she just doesn't know what to do. This is my grandson. Please, God, send my grandson back. I can't stand. What has happened? How could this have happened? Oh, please, I'll do anything. I'll do anything. Just. And all of a sudden, another wave comes along and plops him right back down right in front of her. And she looks at him and she turns around. She goes on her knees. She says to God, he was wearing a hat. You know. I haven't thought of that story in a long time. This idea is not just good citizenship we're talking about here. It's cultivating this attitude of flow, of allowing, of permitting things to continue to grow in you, because gratitude is love. Now, the hardest part about gratitude for most people is the understanding that you have to also be grateful when things don't show up. And you have to learn, this is the toughest part, you have to learn to be grateful for that which you don't have and for the suffering that you are going through and for the experiences of scarcity that seem to be present in your life. Because in essence, until you can be grateful in these moments and understand that you can't have sobriety, generally speaking, without having known its opposite. Everything in the physical plane has its opposite. People who have been through addictions generally know and appreciate and are grateful for those addictions when they transcend them. You won't find very many alcoholics who are in recovery who will say, I resent my addiction days. Instead, what they say is, they were the greatest teachers I ever had. And I couldn't be where I am today without having had those. Now, this is true for all of our experiences. When people say to me, can you really say that you are grateful that your father walked out of your life when you were just a baby? Can you really say that the time that he spent in prison, and the time, the fact that he never sent any money, and the fact that you had to spend early years in foster homes and so on, and away from the rest of your family, can you really say that you're grateful for that? I say, my father was my greatest teacher. I never met the man. But without my experience of learning to rely upon myself as a young boy, I couldn't, as a grown man, be teaching self-reliance today. Couldn't do it. Because to learn to rely upon yourself is something that you have to have the direct conscious experience of. And when you've had it, then you can teach it. And I'm grateful for it. I was having dinner last night with my oldest daughter, Tracy, and I was thinking about her mother and I, who have been divorced for 25 years now. And I was telling Tracy at dinner that your mother, even though we didn't agree and didn't get along, your mother was one of the great people in my life. There are many qualities that both of us could look at in her, and she can look at in me, certainly, and say, these are the reasons why it didn't work. But you can also do the opposite. You can look at this person and say, but look at these qualities. Look at the honesty. Look at the integrity. Look at these things and remember that. And my experience being married to my daughter's mother, to Judy, those many years ago, when I was a young boy, it seems like, taught me how to be not only a better husband later on and a better father, but it gave me direct experiences of being able to transcend my own pettiness and my own inability to relate at a level that I am able to do today. Without that, I couldn't be where I am today. I've often said to people, I am what is called a reverse paranoid. You know, What is when you ask someone, what is a paranoid? Well, a paranoid thinks that everybody is talking about you and that they're saying terrible things about you. And a reverse paranoid is someone who knows that everybody's talking about you, but they're saying nice things about you. So when you walk by and someone said, are they talking about me? You say, yeah, of course. Why wouldn't they be? And this attitude of being able to be grateful, not just for the things that are manifesting and showing up in your life, but for the things that don't show up and for those experiences, when you get to a point where in this moment I can now say, okay, it didn't show up and there's a great lesson in this and I'll get that lesson and then I'll stop the blockage of abundance flowing into my life. That's what gratitude is. It is the free expression of the heart to the fullness of the universe. And an understanding that you're not going to get it all, that you are it all already. You are it all already. That divine, organizing, omniscient, all-loving, unconditional loving God is in you already. And everything that you need to be peaceful, to have love, to be successful, you already have in this moment. You don't need one thing more. Anything else that shows up is just a bonus from the universe. And you got to be grateful for all of it, including that which doesn't. In order to be able to move to the next level, generally speaking, you first experience a fall. In order to be able to move to the next level, spiritual advancements are usually preceded by a fall of one kind or another. And in order to generate the energy to get to a higher place, you must first experience a fall. It's like when I was a high jumper on the track team, I would run up to the bar and I would get down as low as I could get. And then I would, by the process of getting down low, I could propel myself to a higher level. That's the metaphor. And you have to be grateful for those falls. The second aspect of this principle is one of generosity. Generosity is taking all that manifests for you in your life, all that shows up for you, and being willing to share it. The thing that generosity does for us is that it liberates us from the concept of scarcity. And that's what we need to have in order to be manifestors. You become liberated from the idea of scarcity when you are willing to generously give of that which shows up in your life. There are many people who tithe. Well, that is, they give a percentage, generally 10% of their earnings, to those who provide spiritual nourishment or spiritual food in their life, even when they don't have it. I did a benefit just recently on Maui for a man who, when he was 32 or 33 years old, his name is Michael Leboff, he was a strapping, surfing type dude on Maui, just a cool guy who was waiting tables and good looking and had women coming here and there all the time and just like one of these guys, you know, that you see all over Maui. He was at the beach one day and they were playing frisbee out there and someone threw the frisbee. And he said, I'll get it for you. And he went and he dove into the shallow water to get the frisbee. But at the moment that he dove, the wave somehow, it receded at that exact second. And the wave was gone and he hit the sand. Now this was an experienced surfer. And he broke broke his neck. And he became a quadriplegic in that instant. And then he said, at that moment, he said, I was reborn. That was about 3 years earlier from now. And this summer, when I was on Maui, a friend of his, Frank Levinson, called me and asked me if I would be willing to do a benefit, if I would speak, and if Jerry Jampolsky, who has also done a program with Nightingale Connor, called Love is Letting Go of Fear, and Jerry and I both did a benefit. I spoke for an hour and a half, Jerry spoke for an hour and a half, and people came in and donated money, and he needed $10,000 in order to go to the Miami Project for the treatment of spinal cord injuries. And now they're finding that there are ways to not only assist these people in their life, but perhaps to even get them walking again. And so they're going to do a complete evaluation, but he needed $10,000. So we did this benefit. and they raised 9,000, and I threw in 1,000, and he had his 10,000. But the interesting thing about this was that when it was done, he took the $1,000 that I gave him, which represented 10% of what he had earned. This man in a wheelchair who is paralyzed from the shoulders down, and he sent it to Kay O'Bara, the woman whose daughter's been in a coma for 27 years, because he felt that he had to give something back. That kind of generosity will allow Michael not only to have the Miami Project show up, where he will be in November, but it will allow probably the healing that he is looking for to begin to take hold, because it releases him from this idea that there is scarcity out there. If you're free enough to give what you have away, especially the things that you have that you treasure, like a lot of people say, and I've been practicing this for quite a few years now, a lot of people say, well, you go through your clothes that you haven't worn in the last year or two, and if you haven't worn them, just take them out of the closet and give them to someone who can benefit from them. You can always find someone that'll benefit from them, which is a wonderful thing to do. But a more powerful, spiritually enriching thing to do is to go through the clothes that you like the best and that you wear all the time, or that you wouldn't want to part with because they really mean so much to you, and give 10% of those away. Then you'll see the spiritual food, if you will, beginning to show up more and more into your life. When you can give away something of yourself that you seem to be attached to, because detaching from it is a big part of this business of manifesting. You see, when you become generous, you are really saying to the universe and to yourself very quietly, I know there are no limits to this divine intelligence. I know it's inexhaustible. I know it was never born. I know it can never die. And therefore, I am willing to allow it to flow through me. The divine intelligence is always moving. It is always flowing. Generosity takes you away from that idea that somehow there's a scarcity out there. I remember I was in New Orleans not too long ago, and I was giving a talk, and I went for a walk with my assistant and several other people, several friends who had come there to hear me speak. And we were walking in the seedy section of New Orleans, where there's a lot of drug addicts, a lot of street people, a lot of prostitutes, a lot of poverty, a lot of lost souls. People who believe that they're alone. And whenever I'm in one of those places, and I seem to be attracted to those places, I think about there but for the grace of God. So many of us know, go I. So many people, when they see homeless people, they think about, well, I'd really like to give to them, but they're really just lazy, and they should go out and get a job. And that keeps me from being generous to them. And I would say to you that if you can't give with love, don't give. Just give a silent blessing. But don't send anger and hatred and judgment and bitterness towards those who are out there, whatever it is that they're doing. I wouldn't say give despite, if you don't feel it coming from your heart, if it's not a heart-space thing, then it is artificial and you will just be filled with resentment and you'll stop the blockage of this flow of energy. So give a silent blessing to that person and hope that perhaps they can find another way or a higher way. But there's also the element of how often that kind of an attitude is what we use to keep us from being able to part with something that we are so attached to. And it's a very convenient thing to hang on to. And we often forget. And being in New Orleans, and there was a young girl, she couldn't have been more than 15. She had been on the streets for 4 years. She hadn't had a bath, I don't think, in all that time. She was obviously into drugs and smelled bad. And I saw the spirit in that child. And I started talking to her. And she was giving me the talk that you hear from street people, about all the reasons why she was there and blaming her mother and blaming all of these kinds of, and essentially not taking responsibility for what her life was. She was kind of, she started to cry after a little while, and I mean, she was really a little girl. And my heart tugged so strong at her, and I offered, I said, you know, my assistant, Maya, was there, and I said, you know, Maya could take you over to the hotel, we can get you a room there, we'll get you all cleaned up. Well, and she just didn't want any part of that at all. So before we left, I said, come over here, Carolyn. And I reached into my pocket, and I had a $100 bill in my pocket, and I gave her the $100 bill. And the people that were there with me said, as we were walking away, don't you realize that you just enabled her to have more drugs and that she's going to spend that on alcohol and on... And I said, you know, it doesn't matter to me what she does with the money. That's not why I gave it to her. I said, the money, as far as I'm concerned, represents one act of kindness from one human being to another. That's all it is. I'm detached from the outcome. I'm not concerned about where that will go. But maybe this person just needs to have one person put their arm around her, demonstrate a little caring, and maybe that one act will help her to get her life off of the streets and off of that death sentence that she was living out. Perhaps. And as you practice generosity of spirit, detach from the outcome about what people are going to do with it, where it's going to go, how it's going to get used, whether it's going to be done for the right way or the way I think it should be done. Detach from that and give from your heart all that shows up in your life. Just let it keep flowing. And after a while, what happens is you are completely detached from how it works out. And you're not even attached to how things show up in your life. And all of those things that you used to be so concerned with when you were back there as an athlete and a warrior and asking for so much and being so concerned of whether you're going to get it and how it's going to show up, when you reach this level of generosity and gratitude in your life, what happens is miraculous. It no longer matters. And the irony here is that as it no longer matters to you, more and more shows up. Until it gets to a point where you can't even handle it all. And you just keep letting it circulate. And you're not concerned at all with where the next one is going to be. You have a knowing. You are so aware of the abundance and the unlimitedness of the divine intelligence that is in everything that it can't be exhausted, that you're willing to allow it to continue to flow through your life. And then you get in synchronicity with that divine force. It's almost like you have a collaboration with fate. And as you collaborate, rather than fight, scarcity moves away in your life. That's how I give. When I give, I ask not for one explanation of how it's going to be used. The giving is done for the purpose of being generous, of the opening of the heart chakra to another human being. And the final aspect of this eighth principle is one that is called service. And very simply, it is shifting the emphasis of your life off of what are my quotas and what's in it for me onto how may I serve you. I have had to practice this in my own life, and it has worked in ways that I can't even begin to tell you. When I go before an audience and I sit down to meditate, I repeat the mantra, how may I serve? How may I serve? How may I serve? How can I get my ego out of this presentation, out of this program, out of what it is that I am doing, and my needs to have rewards and have money come into me and my needs to have applause and to have people tell me how wonderful I am? How can I get all of that out? And it doesn't matter what you do. You can shift to gratitude, generosity, and service. If you're a dentist, you can give a flower to every patient. You can call them in the evening and ask how they're doing, as my dentist always does. You can make your waiting room a place where people look forward to coming by putting in programs like this for people to listen to while they're being drilled on. It doesn't make any difference. If you're a cab driver, you can make your cab a place of service. You can do a little bit extra. And the irony is, when you turn your life over to being a statesman and ultimately to being a spiritual being, this attitude allows this free-flowing, unconditional, loving energy that is the divine universe, that is God, to enter into your life. And it just keeps flowing. You're just keeping the channels open, folks. That's all you're doing. You're just keeping it open. And you're aware of every little cue that comes along that blocks that channel. The minute that it's there, it's an angry thought, it's a judgmental thought, it's a stressful thought. The minute that it shows up, you replace it with an attitude of service, gratitude, generosity, and it leaves. I'd like to close this principle with another reading of a wonderful poet whose name is Khalil Gibran, the Lebanese poet who wrote a great collection of writings called The Prophet back in 1923, which is still a bestseller today and deserves it. And he wrote on many different subjects, great wisdom. And here, I'd like to share with you what he wrote on self-knowledge. And think about this business of gratitude and generosity and service. And a man said, "Speak to us on self-knowledge." And he answered, saying, "Your hearts know in silence the secrets of the days and nights. But your ears thirst for the sound of your heart's knowledge. You would know in words that which you would have always known in thought. You would touch with your fingers the naked body of your dreams. And it is well you should. The hidden wellspring of your soul must needs rise and run murmuring to the sea. And the treasure of your infinite depths would be revealed to your eyes. But let there be no scales to weigh your unknown treasure. And seek not the depths of your knowledge with staff or sounding line, for self is a sea, boundless and measureless. Say not, I have found the truth, but rather, I have found a truth. Say not, I have found the path of the soul. Say rather, I have met the soul walking upon my path. For the soul walks upon all paths. The soul walks not upon a line, neither does it grow like a reed. The soul unfolds itself like a lotus of countless petals." Beautiful. Beautiful. "Your hearts know in silence the secrets of the days and nights." The part of you that knows, the part of you that is infinite, as the poet suggests, the part of you that is every place, is also in all that you would like to see show up in your life. And if you keep a generous, grateful, serving attitude, you'll never block it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is the end of side 10. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side 9 for your next listening.